ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Booger McFarland and Kevin Agande.
Welcome to the ESPN College Football Podcast. It's September 15th, Wednesday. Kevin Agande with you. And as we do every Wednesday, it's great to bring in my man, Booger McFarland. We will talk to him specifically about some of the ABC game matchups, Michigan State, Miami, and of course, Auburn, Penn State, and the whiteout. We want to get his early thoughts on Florida, Alabama, what's going to be the key for Dan Mullen in the swamp. The concerns he has for the two programs in Texas after the weekend, specifically at the quarterback position for A&M after losing Haynes King, as well as the quarterback switch for the Longhorns and Steve Sarkisian. And a little breakdown in the Big Ten, plus we get his DEFCON picks. He's got two specific programs that we will round out the show. But we're going to start with the DEFCON conversation with him early on a topic that everybody's been talking about over the last 48 hours. That is the head coach opening at USC and what they must do next. Before we get to Booger, two things I want to mention. First, check out Fantasy Focus Football with new episodes Monday through Friday. That waiver wire going into week two of the NFL season is going to be pretty spicy. You got Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp. They'll focus and get you ready for the week two matchups. Listen to Fantasy Focus Football on your favorite podcast app or watch them on ESPN+. Also, stream season two of Better Days, the Mike Greenberg-hosted series that brings the true stories of unforgettable gambling adventures to life. If there's a game, someone's betting on it. All episodes are now streaming only on ESPN+. As always, on a Wednesday, it's great to have Booger McFarland here with us. We usually go through the ABC games. We have a couple of them that stand out. And we also are doing something that we love to do on Wednesday. Started it last week where we go with Booger's DEFCON graphic and situation that he loves to post on Twitter. And I think it's ideal that we combine the DEFCON conversation out the gate, because I want to always pick three teams. Let's pick one team right now. We'll do the other two later because I want to focus on, you know, the big topic. And that is, of course, USC looking for a head coach after parting ways with Clay Helton. We've heard a lot of opinions from a lot of people in the last couple of days and 48 hours. If you follow college football, I want to get your initial thoughts on the decision in week two, coming off the loss against Stanford, how they lost, and also kind of this cloud that was kind of hanging over the program for the last couple of years with Clay Helton on, is he going to be here? Is he not? And then suddenly, boom, they make the decision.
Well, you know, when you fire a guy after 2 weeks, Kev, you're basically telling me that it was in your thought process all summer long. So why did we wait all summer? I get it with COVID. I understand that. Why did we wait until after the second game of the season? Because it's not like in the second game of the season, all of a sudden you're like, yep, Clay's not the answer. Like, you've known in the back of your mind Clay wasn't the answer. Very similar to the Les Miles situation. Remember last game of the season, Les Miles, he's our coach. Three or four games into the next season, he's fired. Well, you knew last season that you wanted to fire him. And so my initial take was they wanted him gone. And somehow, some way, they talked themselves back into it, they being USC. If you want to understand what the issue is, I think you first have to peel a lot of layers back. And I think the biggest layer out of SC is, how do they get and keep the players that are in state and in Southern California from going elsewhere? I mean, Big Cinco, Bryce Young, all these guys, man, these guys have left Southern California to go start Alabama and Clemson.
And yeah, so CJ Stroud, we can go Kayvon Thibodeau, like, and Oregon.
I can go on and on.
Yeah, 100%. What Oregon has done in Southern California with Mario Cristobal. Keep on going. Yep.
And so that is the biggest issue for USC, because once you get the players, then you can start to regain, quote unquote, the glory days and get back to what USC is used to doing, which is winning a lot. And so they fired Clay because Clay didn't win enough. Clay didn't win the big games. And Kev, here's another notion. Clay wanted to recruit a certain type of player. This is something that's not going to get talked about. Clay Helton didn't want to go into, for lack of a better words, Clay didn't want to go into the hood, okay? Clay didn't want to go get the players that were kind of rough around the edges. Good kids, passed the test scores, but they didn't fit the typical ideal two-parent home, lovey-dovey, everything is kosher. Clay didn't want that type of kid in his program. And so Clay alienated a lot of guys. And here's what happens with recruiting, Kev. If I'm a recruit and I don't go and my buddy's coming up the next year and he doesn't go, well, the guys that follow us aren't coming either.
You lose the pipeline.
Once you lose the pipeline, it's over. Clay lost the pipeline is done. And so the next coach at USC is going to have to go in and do a great job of restoring everything in Southern California, because Southern California, Texas, Louisiana, Ohio, Florida, Georgia, if you win those areas or states, you should be able to compete for a national championship. So Southern Cal has plenty of players.
If you win your region, you're good, yeah. Right? Like if you win the Southern California region, you're good to go. And we saw that pipeline year in and year out with the talent that would not leave the state. So who should be the guy in your mind? I've seen a variety of short lists, the Luke Fickell connection to Bone, obviously, at Cincinnati. You see, you know, Brian Kelly was mentioned. Mario Cristobal has been mentioned. You know, James Franklin had to talk about it yesterday during Penn State's news conference before facing Auburn. Who's your guy?
I'll give you two. And I'm not going to regurgitate all the names that you said. And I'll start by saying this. It's easy to say, well, let's go get James Franklin because he's turned around Vanderbilt and he's turned around Penn State. It's easy to say, let's go get Cristobal because these are proven commodities. But if you're a proven commodity, Kev, why do you leave what you built and say, you know what, I'm going to go start over? Kev, you got a nice, beautiful house. You got swimming pools and rocks everywhere. You got all kind of stuff. Are you just willing to leave that tomorrow to go say, you know what, I'm going to start from scratch and rebuild? So it's easy to say, let's go do that. But I think it's hard to convince these guys to do it. Now, with all that being said, here's who I go get. I think Chris Richard, okay? And Chris Richard is a guy who was the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. He's been in the NFL for a long time. He's got California ties. He understands. He's got a connection to Pete Carroll, so he understands that whole dynamic. But more than anything, Kev, he's hungry and he's relatable. And when you're hungry and relatable, it's the one thing that when you sit down in my living room and you're talking to me about my son, I got to see that you can relate to me as a parent and you have the ability to connect with these kids. See, it's easy to say, let's go get Saban. Saban is established. So when you don't have the established pellets on the wall, you got to get somebody that can convince mom and dad when you're in their living room that, hey, I can relate to your kid and your kid is going to be safe for me. So one would be Chris Richard. Another name that I like, let me see here, because I'm trying to come up with different guys.
You know who'd be right perfect? Like, but obviously cannot happen is Lane Kiffin.
Who's that?
He'd be perfect.
Oh, hell no, it can't happen.
But no. I'm saying that if they didn't have a relationship in the past and what we saw, he'd be perfect there, considering where he's at in the stage of his career and what he's trying to do, how well he can recruit. And I use that, and you could even mention like Sark, right? There's a trend here. These are guys that went to Alabama rehab, right? And naturally, you know what I first did when I started thinking about this? All right, who's in the rehab right now? The coaching rehab at Alabama right now, because it's the next up. It's guys that have a lot of talent. It's guys that are, you know, analysts or that have moved up because somebody's moved on, right? And there's one guy that's sitting there and I'm like, whoa, this could make sense. But I'm not sure how it would be, you know, how it would come across is Bill O'Brien. Like, I initially thought of that because just what he did at Penn State. I understand, you know, I understand a lot of people will turn and give the side eye because, okay, personnel guy, not great in Houston. And the DeAndre Hopkins trade will always be hanging over him. But when we're talking about a coach who understands offense, that's the first thing I was like, he's the next guy in the Alabama car wash here when it comes to coaches kind of looking at their resume and saying, let's get some rehab and let's come back out and get another job.
I'll give you one that's a little cleaner, but from the Alabama pipeline, the coach at the University of Maryland, Mike Locksley. Okay.
Don't tell Taylor that because Taylor doesn't want to lose him. Taylor, I understand our producer.
Guy that's been there and done that. Since he's been at the University of Maryland, he's recruited at a high level. That program is turned around, that they're playing, offensive football at a very, very high level. And you need somebody. To me, I'm going to get a guy that I can drop in Southern California and he'll get 80 to 85% of the top talent. Mike Locksley can recruit. So I like Chris Richard. I like Mike Locksley. Listen, if you can get Urban Meyer to leave Trevor Lawrence and, you know, he has another heart condition down there and come back to college, so be it.
How about that?
If you can.
How about that?
Mike? Come on. One game in.
One game in. And he's like, wait a second. You couldn't have done this all last year? I just find that fascinating. How about that?
Exactly.
Because he's one of those guys. Urban go anywhere and turn things around. He just he knows what he's doing. He knows how to handle the space when it comes to recruiting. And then he's
doesn't it seem like Urban is built for the college game? Like after 100%. After watching him one off season deal with the media, Trevor Lawrence, it just seems like certain guys are built for the college game. Urban, Saban, like those guys just fit in college. Even though maybe if they hang around long enough, they can be successful in the NFL. But like we know what they can do in college right off the bat.
I gotta tell you though, in the end, to me, this feels like a James Franklin job, and he's not going to escape the questions because he's a great recruiter. He understands about winning. He understands about winning at a blue blood program. Mm-hmm. I think Franklin's going to be one of those guys that's going to be targeted and talked about the entire 3 months here. The one issue that USC will run into is you can't have an NFL coach right now. Because of specifically the recruiting period, right? At the end, you've got to get somebody in there, and nobody's leaving their coaching on the sidelines in the NFL to take over in December when you've got to get that early signing period. That's right. Critical now. It's no longer February is the critical signing period. So with that all in mind, what DEFCON number would you give USC right now?
Well, I think this program has got to be at a one, Kev. And that's not just the state of it currently. That's the state of the program like the last 5 to 7 years when you look at it. It's like, okay, we've had a little success. But if I name the top 10 programs in America, Blue Bloods, big time programs, USC is one of those. They've got a ton of Heisman Trophy winners. They've won national championships. But, Kev, they've been the forgotten program. Like, to be in a recruiting hotbed, they almost remind me of what Georgia was before Mark Richt was there, like just kind of floating in mediocrity. And then all of a sudden you get a good coach and you take a little bit of a step and then you kind of fall back. And then Georgia got Kirby Smart and now they're playing for national championship. So who's going to be the guy that's going to come in? Clay Helton won, 21 games the first 2 years he was there? Something like that. Like who's going to come in and say, okay, you won, but you didn't win to the level that we expect. So I'm giving them a DEFCON 1, Kev, because if this hire is not a home run that can go in and stop the bleeding, we're going to forget about USC maybe for the next 5 to 10 years, and that'll be catastrophic to their ego. It'll be catastrophic to their standing, I think, in the hierarchy of college football.
They're at a crossroads, no doubt about it. And one key thing in this storyline of USC is Dante Williams is there. Dante Williams came from Oregon, phenomenal recruiter. Let's not forget USC is a top five recruiting class right now. That is critical that they have to keep these recruits in line,
Which means he's probably going to stay there in some capacity and they're going to hire a new coach. If the new signing period is in December, that means I expect this new staff or whoever the coach is to probably be hired before Thanksgiving somewhere. Mm-hmm. Early November to give him an opportunity to kind of make some inroads. So I think you're looking at about a 60-day coaching search here for USC.
And the guys we're talking about, a guy like James Franklin, if he's in the playoff conversation, he can't bail, right? People are going to mention Matt Campbell, and if Matt Campbell's in any conversation. You know, we've heard, of course, the Bob Stoopses of the world as well. Lincoln Riley, like, hit up, go for – you know, shoot your shot, right? I mean, you say, oh, immediately, yeah. Right? You're like, there's no chance.
No, none. Listen, if Lincoln Riley turned into Cowboys, what makes you think he's going to USC? I mean, come on. Are you kidding me?
This is true. This is true.
Come on.
We'll see how this plays out, of course. We will get to Boog's other two DEFCON teams a little bit later in the podcast. Okay, so let's talk about some of the games. A handful of ABC games. We've had some really good ones. We'll get to it in a second. I do want to get your thoughts, early thoughts about Florida, Alabama, because we watched a lot of Florida. Week one, we had Alabama on our air against Miami. Last week on ABC, we had Florida against USF. What are your early thoughts about this matchup here in the Swamp?
Well, in order for Florida to win, they're going to have to capitalize on the emotion, which means their offense is going to have to produce some type of spark early. So who's going to be the quarterback? I think that's the big question. You know, we're watching Florida last week. It's Emory Jones, Anthony Richardson. Richardson looks phenomenal running around. But then he ran into the end zone. He kind of grabbed a hamstring. How healthy is he going to be? Okay, you can't just line up and run dive option at Alabama. Like, your quarterback is going to have to be dynamic. He's got to run a little bit, but he's going to have to make some plays down the field. I don't know if Emory Jones is accurate enough to do that. So Richardson's health is going to be key, Kev. If he's healthy, Dan Mullen is a very, very good offensive coach. He'll be able to scheme up some things. And Florida's got talent. They'll be able to figure out how to put their players in position to make some plays. But I need Richardson at the quarterback, because I think he would make Alabama play a different way. Emory Jones is in there. I'm really not concerned about them beating me consistently throwing the ball. Richardson's in there. Now I got to play the Gators a little bit differently. So I think that's key number one. And then you flip it over the other side. I mean, when you talk to the Florida faithful, they got this thing about their defense and their defensive coordinator, Ty Grantham. They call it third and Grantham, because anytime it's third and anything over like 2 yards or 10 yards, they know that the other team is getting it. Like, they hate their defensive coordinator. Okay, I'm sure your wife, who is a diehard Florida fan, feels the same way. So Florida's defense is going to have to figure out a way. Can they rattle Bryce Young at all? Mm-hmm. Like, he's been unflappable so far. So I think their defense's ability to put pressure on Bryce Young, because this Alabama team is really not going to line up and pound you. They want to get explosive plays. Can Richardson make a play? Can he be healthy and then make plays in the passing game? And can Florida's defense figure out a way to rattle the young guy, Bryce Young?
Yeah, Richardson obviously dealing with that hamstring right now. Dan Mullen says it looks positive, dealing with the tightness here. That defense on Florida side also a little beat up, especially at the linebacker position and the secondary. My thing is this. We were watching USF, and at a certain point, it was like, boy, in the second half, this should be a rout, and Emory Jones is losing confidence, and the coaching staff is losing confidence in Emory Jones. And then it's like, wait a second, is Dan holding back because he doesn't want to show enough on film against Bama? Did you get that vibe here while we were watching this game play out? How dangerous a game like that was, where they're supposed to dominate, they're dominating early on, and then you lose confidence in the quarterback with some of the mistakes he made in the second half?
There's always going to be some of that. Remember Oregon, Fresno State early on, week one? Oregon, everybody's like, man, Oregon doesn't look good. And all of a sudden, it's like we're questioning them. And then they go to the horseshoe and they open the whole package up and voila. So, yes, there's always going to be some of that. Because when you think you're, without a doubt, the more dominant team, you're not good. You don't have to come out and run trick plays or run your best stuff. You should be able to line up with basic offense and defense and allow your talent to flourish. So, yes, there's some of that, Kev. But, hey, whatever you held back, it better be in the chamber this week. I know that.
Like, no doubt.
You better not hold anything back this week.
100%, man. You've been working on plays in the middle of the summer that you didn't unleash. You're doing it right now. This is the weekend to do it with Bama in town. The Swamp will be rocking. Our ABC games, Michigan State versus Miami. Miami's favored by 6.5, which is a surprise. By the way, how about Miami? You open up against Bama and then Appalachian State. You barely beat Appalachian State. The big story that night is the cat falling down in the stadium. And you survived, right?
Yes.
When you see Michigan State, I Mel Tucker deserves a lot of credit, right? Yep. 2 wins last year, 2 wins already this year. Kenneth Walker, Jordan Simmons, Peyton Thorne, Jaden Reed. It looks like this offense has some juice coming into a game. What's the one thing that stands out in the matchup?
Well, for me, I like their ability to run the football. Like, if you go back and you watch the Alabama game against Miami, Alabama, yeah, they threw for some yards, but when Alabama wanted to run the ball, they lined up and they physically moved Miami out of the way. So when you look at Michigan State, Mel Tucker, Mel has been with Nick, Mel understands all of that. I think Kenneth Walker will be key. And the running game is astronomically better this season than it was last year. I don't think they had a rushing touchdown last year. And already I think they're 4, 5, or 6 somewhere in there. So the running game is better. Peyton Thorne, hey, big guy, listen, it's a lot of speed on that field. Okay, probably more speed than you're used to, except when you go against Penn State and Ohio State. Be calm. I think Mel's going to control the game early with the running game, allow Walker to get established, and then take some shots, play action pass down the field. Can Miami blow up and stop the run? And then when it comes to the Hurricanes offensively, it's always going to be the same question until I see it consistently. De'Ari King, we know you can move around. We know you can make the athletic plays, but can you make the plays down the field? If we stop your running game and we stop Cameron Harris from running the football, can you make plays with your arm down the field? Ultimately, that'll be the key again for Miami. They necessarily couldn't do it against Appalachian State, and that's why we were like, hey, App State, DEFCON 1, like it's big trouble in Little China right now, you know?
No doubt. That felt like we saw Manny after the game. He did not look happy. Like, that was one of those faces where it was just like, I know we won, but it felt like a loss tonight. But you know that coach face where you're all like beat up red and you're just like, how do I get out of here? Please just get me off the field. I don't know how we survived a game like this. And again, the Miami slate early on is not easy. Clemson is our second game. DJ Uiagalelei on track again. They got a Georgia Tech team that has some big questions at quarterback. You know, Sims, his arm was in a sling. And there's a lot of questions here. Listen, Jeff Collins in year three, I think he's got to do a complete turnaround. And we've seen that over the last 2 years to get his guys, really good recruiter. Right. Is this game even a measuring stick for Georgia Tech? How would you judge a game like this?
Well, no, I'm not going to judge it because they're not going to be full strength with that, you know, because Sims came on the scene and we're like, hey, freshman, man, the next 2 years at least are going to be outstanding. Now the game's in a sling. So the lack of confidence from the team is not going to be there because we don't have all our bullets in the chamber. So I don't know if this is a measuring stick game because I only measure teams when they're full strength. Like, it's tough to measure because we know man for man, from 1 to 85, as far as the scholarship players, Georgia Tech can't match up to Clemson. But the game is not played that way. So can they figure out a way to create some offense and make some plays without their starting quarterback? I like Jeff. Jeff's a good coach, but Jeff is behind the eight ball in this game. And I think if this is a game, then we're going to start to put Clemson again in our crosshairs for another DEFCON because this shouldn't be a game. It should.
Okay. Yeah, and I think Collins just needs a couple more years to get his guys because, again, you are completely revamping an archaic type of offense to get your type of guys. And
I mean, we can't give him like 5 more years, Kev.
No, I didn't say 5 more.
How many more are we trying to give him?
A guy like Chip waited, right, to get his type of guys. We patiently wait for 3-4 years, right? And I think that's where you got
to
go.
What does Chip have to do with this? You love bringing up Chip. How does UCLA fit in this conversation?
No. I'm saying specifically, look, it's paid off for Chip. You're just mad at UCLA, you know, in those blue uniforms.
Sissy blue stuff. You didn't have to bring all that up in here.
All right, the nightcap. And the cool thing about this, Boog, in your time when you played, also in your broadcast career, you've been to really cool stadiums and cool environments. Yep. You were shooting Vegas on Monday night to see that Raiders blackout there. We got a whiteout Penn State. And I think, you know, I've been there during a whiteout. It's incredible. It is. I would put that head to head with anything and everything. Now, I've never been to Death Valley in a night game in Baton Rouge. No. I can only imagine what that experience is.
The real Death Valley, by the way. The real Death Valley, not the fake one in Clemson. Yes, I'm just saying.
The whiteout's going to be rocking.
Right.
Clifford, Noah Kane, Jahan Dotson, Bo Nix on the road. Now, Auburn's coming in number 22, Penn State coming in number 10. What's this game going to come down to in your mind?
Well, I think if you're Penn State, Clifford, Kane, they've shown you so far going into Camp Randall, first game of the season, they got that win. So they are kind of tried and tested earlier on. We haven't really seen what Auburn can do just yet. And to me, the biggest question around Auburn is going to be, one, about the head coach, Brian Harsin, and two, about the quarterback, Bo Nix. When we get in the big game, what are we going to do? Because Bo Nix's tendency in big games, he panics. Okay, he starts selling the farm a dime an acre. He's like, hey, get me the hell up out of here. Like, we've seen that before. Like, so what can Brian Harsin do to settle his quarterback down? Okay, the transfer from LSU, TJ Finley. And I know Bo Nix beat him out, but there's always that in the back of my mind. If Bo Nix went to bed in a big game, I don't know if he's even eligible to play or whatever, but I know he was in the mix during fall camp. But it really comes down to Auburn, because it's going to be an electric environment. Can Auburn figure out a way to settle the quarterback down to play in a big environment? I've never been in a whiteout, but it looks phenomenal. Okay, when you're a big guy, Kev, over 300 pounds, you don't wear white a lot. Okay. So I've never worn that much white. So I don't really fantasize of being in a white out or an all white outfit, but it sounds like this thing is going to be rocking. But Bo Nix has got to make sure that he plays under control, which he hasn't done in the previous couple years in big games.
Boog says that wearing a white polo right now during this. What is it? What color is it? Like off gray?
This is more of a, it's a light, it's a lilac.
You don't hear many big guys say they're wearing lilac. Appreciate that. But yeah. Boog says all this. I don't wear a lot of white, but I've got a picture of Boog wearing tan, and boy, and that is a sight to see in Boog all tan in a suit with the short sleeves. One of my favorite pictures.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it. I do. Trust me. I know it is.
Yeah, so Penn State's going to be rocking. I mean, honestly, like, there's a lot here for James Franklin, because when you see what happened to Ohio State,
specifically,
and that defense, and Ryan Day set to make these structural changes, not happy with Kerry Combs and what's going on, because it's a pattern, as he describes. The Big Ten feels a little bit wide open in my mind after watching what we saw. Or am I jumping to a quick conclusion here, an overreaction after what happened in the Oregon game?
Yeah, you're like an old lady that sees a gray hair. She runs straight to the dye. Like, just one gray hair is not going to get you, Kev. Like, okay, so let's stop jumping to conclusions. Now, here's what I will say. If I'm Ryan Day and you saw this coming, why are you waiting until it bites you to make the change? Doesn't a great leader see what's coming, look into the future, sees the forecast? It's like, I'm not going to go get the umbrella till it starts raining. What if I know the forecast says rain? I'm going to bring the umbrella with me. Mm-hmm. So I blame Ryan Day for that. As far as the Big Ten being wide open, until I see somebody that can consistently match up against Ohio State, it's Ohio State and everyone else. I think Iowa is good. I don't think Iowa is great offensively, but defensively, special teams, I think they're outstanding. I love where they are. Penn State, James Franklin, big games. I mean, come on now. I mean, this is the same team that started, what, 0-4 last year? I get it. 0-5. I get it. We've turned it around. So I think it's still Ohio State's world and everyone else. But I do agree, if Ohio State can't get their defense fixed, then we got to have a conversation later in the season, because Iowa, we know what Iowa's going to play, a tough, hard-nosed defense. I like Goodson running the football. I like what they can do. They even showed a little play-action pass against Iowa State in the Cy-Hawk Trophy. Don't ask me about the Cy-Hawk Trophy. I'll give you something later on that. Penn State probably can be the most explosive with Kane and Clifford and what they can do, but it's still Ohio State's world.
How do you feel about Michigan then, after what we saw from Michigan? Are you buying what they're selling right now?
I mean, they're not going to be able to rush for 333 yards against everybody like they did Washington. So, no, I can't buy that. You know, Michigan, big game. How many times have we heard this? Michigan, big game, Harbaugh's ranked, expectations, and then he lays an egg. So until I see them do that, then, hey, you beat Washington, okay? And that's something that we need to talk about also, because UW, post-Peterson, Jimmy Lake's my guy. I love Jimmy Lake. Jimmy Lake was on the staff with us in Tampa. But you can't give up 333 yards rushing when you're a defensive-oriented head coach and still think that you're going to be okay. So Washington has got issues out there also.
Okay, so I want to say one final thing about the Big Ten. You mentioned Iowa. If Penn State were to win Saturday night, just circle October 9th. That is when Penn State faces Iowa. And I think that game's at Kinnick.
Where's that game at, by the way?
That's at Kinnick. Yeah, Kinnick.
Night game. We got the hospital going.
That place will be rocking. And that will be – if Penn State wins this weekend and Iowa continues, that could be the biggest game in the first part of the season in the conference. It will be the biggest game, as we see later on the schedule play out for all the teams. So I can't wait. We will see what happens, of course, on ABC, Penn State hosting Auburn in primetime. Before we get to go to your DEFCON, I do want to get your quick thoughts on Texas A&M. Because when you look at A&M and what they're dealing with, Zach Calzada is the quarterback, because Haynes King cracking his lower leg. He's out at least 4 to 7 weeks. What stands out to me with A&M, they've got New Mexico, okay? Then they've got Arkansas. Then they've got Mississippi State which won their first two games of the season, and then Alabama. Are you concerned right now with this team, with Calzada under center for Jimbo Fisher?
If this were going into one of those games you mentioned, yes, I'd be concerned. But going with New Mexico, I think Calzada proved. I mean, he's on the road against Colorado. He came in, he made some plays. Yes, they're going to miss Haynes King. Haynes King was the more, I think, the better thrower. He still had some athletic ability, but he was the better thrower. However, I think when it's all said and done, I think they'll be okay. Calzada and King went neck and neck to win this job in the offseason. Calzada's going to bring a different element, but I think A&M's biggest strength is their offensive line and their defense this year, I think. Spiller is one of the – I think he's the best running back in the country. So if you're Jimbo, like, don't try to recreate this thing. Give the ball to Spiller. It's like Texas with Robinson. Hey, man, listen, what do? Let's feature Robinson. Let's run him. Let's throw it. Like, don't try to recreate the wheel here. Give the ball to your best players. Rely on your defense. Allow your quarterback to settle down. And then once he gets into the Florida game, he can make some plays. So I'm not panicked on A&M because where they are and because Calzada was on the road against Colorado, he made some plays.
You mentioned Texas. Nice segue there because Texas is not back. All right. After what we saw, it's amazing. Like literally within 1 week, it's like you feel good about Louisiana. And then, I mean, Sam Pittman's crew at Arkansas, just the physicality. They just punched Texas in the face nonstop and said, hey, old rivalry, this is what it's going to be like in the SEC when you join us, regardless, week in and week out. Casey Thompson now getting the start over Hudson Card. They've got Rice this weekend. What was the shocking thing about what we saw from Sark in your mind? Just that they didn't feature more of Robinson in that offense against Arkansas, or just how they were manhandled on the line?
Yeah, Kev. You know, it's amazing. We give up 300-plus yards rushing to Arkansas. We get physically manhandled. Our defense doesn't step up. Hey, let's make a quarterback change. That'll fix it. Like, well, I mean, come on. Like, I get it. We want to play better offensively. I just have a hard time thinking that you're going to go from Hudson Card to Casey Thompson. All of a sudden, everybody's going to play with more vigor and enthusiasm. I like Sark. Okay, Sark has been under Nick. Sark understands how to get this done. Did Sark make the right choice coming out of fall camp? Sounds like he did. Okay, and if that's the case, then are you going to try now to outscore more people? It almost seems like he's reaching. Defensively, they were bad. Offensively, I still think they got to feature Robinson more. I'm concerned about Texas right now. Just because it doesn't seem like Sark has a plan or an identity to get this team, because there's no way they should. Yeah, you can lose to Arkansas because, no disrespect, Sam Pittman is a really, really good coach. Arkansas is taking after his demeanor. They are a physically tough team, but they're not, 25, 30 points better than Texas. At least they shouldn't be. So that's why I'm concerned about Texas a little bit.
Yeah, the score was 40-21. It never felt like it was a 19-point
game. Oh, it wasn't that close.
Not once, right? And by the way, you know, with some of the stuff that that Sark said about Card was he struggled under pressure. But then, you know, Sark put some pressure on the wide receivers. He's got to help. There are no explosive plays that we're seeing. And he's coming from a place that over the last 2 years has produced five first round draft picks at wide receiver. Five or six, right? Yes. Like, yeah, five, if you take a look at all those guys, like, and at one point they were all in the same room. Sark is just trying to find one person to make plays on the outside at the wide receiver position. All right, so we've talked about the DEFCON here specifically with USC. I want to bring up two programs specifically now that we saw coming off some ugly losses over the weekend and where they're at in your mind. And you mentioned it briefly, and that is Washington. What's the DEFCON number for Washington and Jimmy Lake right now?
I think it's got to be DEFCON 2 relative to the expectations. Okay. Washington is not a perennial national power. However, it's at 2 because Jimmy Lake is like his background, his foundation is a defensive coach. That's what he is. He's a good recruiter. He's also the handpicked guy of Chris Peterson to take over. Like, they didn't really have a coaching search. Hey, I'm leaving. Jimmy's the guy. Great. Thanks, Chris. We got this. Cool. And, man, it just doesn't like that. They have zero offense, and your defense is getting smashed. And so I'm just concerned with how long Can Jimmy Lake continue to get the guys to rally behind him? We always talk about it. You don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. You want to be the guy that follows the guy that follows the guy. Mm-hmm. Okay, you feel me?
Yep.
He's trying to follow a guy who's a legend out there in Chris Peterson. Meanwhile, Peterson's on Fox and he's looking good. He's got his microphone on and everything is great. If I'm Jimmy, I call Chris, hey, man, help me out here. What do I do? And so I'm putting Washington at a DEFCON 2 because I know a lot of people out in Seattle. When that place is rolling and they're in that stadium, man, it's one of the loudest stadiums that I've ever heard. It's phenomenal. But right now they are at a crossroads after Peterson's left. Got to see my guy Jimmy Lake pick it up a little bit. DEFCON 2 for you, Doug.
If we're tapping into Chris's phone while talking to Jimmy, maybe be like, Jimmy, I can't really talk. I got USC on the other line. They just called me.
That's a great point.
Right? Like, that is a possibility. If he feels relaxed and ready to go, Chris Peterson's one of those guys. And obviously, he stepped away from the game. But we watch him, you know, we see him in the studio during those half times. And he looks just relaxed.
No,
like he's happy, and yeah. He found his sweet spot. All right, DEFCON final team. I still couldn't believe it happened, and it's Florida State. All the emotion and the feel good that you had from Sunday night and what they did against Notre Dame, and you're like, oh man, they're back. The emotions, I believe what they can do. They almost beat the Irish, and then to lose to Jacksonville State, there is no excuse, especially with the defense that was called. So what's the DEFCON you give after that walk-off win by Jacksonville State at Doak?
Hey, this is a new one for you, Kev. Sound the alarm, okay? We have passed DEFCON 1. Sound the alarm. Hey, all hands on deck. It is time. Battle is imminent. It is time for us to look each other in the eye. Hey, I may not come back. You may not come back, but we got to go to battle right now.
Okay, you're facing nuclear war right now.
Sound the alarm. Because here's the deal, Kev. If you're Mike Norvell, okay, Notre Dame's coming to the house. It was a valiant effort. Tremendous effort. Mackenzie Milton comes in. We're listening to Joe Tess. And Joe Tess is, I couldn't tell if there was a football game going on or a Lifetime movie. Like, it was phenomenal. Okay, he was just, it was a magical night. They lost, but you had people saying, I learned more about Florida State in this game. Humphrey simply said, man, Mike Norvell has got something to build on. And then after that and Jacksonville State. It's almost as if they took one step forward and took two steps back.
Yeah.
And for a program that is as proud and has won national championships, one of my best friends is Derek Brooks, and I know how he feels about that program. Like, it used to be Florida State, Miami, like the University of Florida, like Florida ran the country at one point. Mm-hmm. And it feels like we're so far from that right now. I like Norvell, what he did at Memphis, but things are not looking good right now. Because, okay, so you started Mackenzie Milton in that game. It's can he make it an entire season from a health standpoint? Okay. Are you going to try to recreate that magic that was about 8 minutes against Notre Dame? I just don't know what he does now. Now do you go back and you make the change again at quarterback? Do you stay with Milton? I think there are a lot of questions, a lot more questions than answers up in Tallahassee right now.
I'm not making an excuse here, but I will tell you that if you're looking at the final play, Mackenzie Milton's not playing prevent or that awful defense, right?
Correct.
Like no one on the offense, like the play calling in that situation, the two D backs that it felt like that they ran into each other at the last second, and you're like, what? Just make the stop here, like
just jump on his back or something.
Jump on his back, do anything you can, trip him, like just make sure, because he had 10 more yards in front of him to score, and you made the analogy one step forward, two steps back. To me, it's one step forward, 10 steps back. We're in Crimson Tide right now. And Derek Brooks has to be Gene Hackman, right? Or somebody at one point, like he's got after a game like that. And we started this podcast talking about USC, right? Being at a crossroads.
Yep.
If you don't make the right hire and where are you going to go? And you could be paying for it over the next 10 years. It feels like that we're in the same position at Florida State. where we were in the last couple of coaching hires on what the decision is going to be now if you do not figure this out. And I'm not saying a decision needs to be made right now because they're preaching patience, but they've got to get this right. If they do not figure it out this year, they've got to get it right in the offseason wherever they go.
Doesn't it almost feel, Kev, and I think I don't know if we've discussed this or I've heard this, doesn't it almost feel like Florida State and Deion Sanders are on a collision course?
Right, exactly.
Like, doesn't it almost feel like we're just, like, you know, we're just sitting here wasting time. Florida State, Deion is doing his thing. He's proven that he can run a program. He's proving, that he can lead. And he may be the most famous Florida State alum ever. Like, doesn't it feel like they're on a collision course? I honestly wouldn't be surprised if in the next year or two they make that move.
Boog, he's in an Affleck commercial with Nick Saban. Like, think about think of all the options, and he's in an Affleck commercial with Nick Saban. Like, that just shows you the power of primetime. And wasn't one of the conversations when he wanted his name being discussed for the job, he doesn't have coaching experience? I got to give Deion credit. All right, I'm going to go get experience. The one thing that stands out specifically to, now granted, you got to have the right structure and coaching staff behind you. But one thing that Deion does is he connects to players today. Yes. And in an era where you have to understand NIL, you have to understand the transfer portal, and you walk into a room and you've been heavily recruited, you understand the presence of a head coach walking to the room, selling you a program, and you got to convince your mom, your dad, your grandparents, your uncle, your aunt, that this is where I want to go. Deion has that flavor to walk into a room to say, and he's got the juice to say, I'll take care of your son. Like, that's the one thing that has stood out to me, especially over the last week where he was talking about names on the back, you know, and making sure the HB schools have those, right? Those, the names on their back and what it was like to have Sanders back there at Florida State.
Yeah.
Whether it's the right move or not, it just feels like you said a collision course. And maybe we should have your boy D Brooks on the show one day to talk to him about that. I'm sure he'll enjoy those kind of questions.
Listen, D Brooks would love to do that at some point, especially if it's imminent. But I do think, you know, because I was very skeptical about whether or not Deion wanted to coach, but he's shown that he wants to do all the work. And yes, he's still flashy and he's still prime, Coach Prime. And I think that as he gets more experience, he will continue to know when he can be Coach Prime and when he has to be the coach of XYZ, whatever that school is, because there's a difference. One, I'm promoting me and my brand. The other, I'm promoting the school in which I work for. Mm-hmm. You can promote the school you work for, or you can promote your brand, I think, at Jackson State. But when you go to a Power Five school, it's about the school. And so I think Deion, he'll get all of that. But it just feels like, man, the inevitable is Florida State and Deion from Florida. He's from Fort Myers. He can recruit the state of Florida. If you can recruit the state of Florida, you can win Florida State. He's got former players. So, I mean, everything is just pointing. If you can win at Jackson State, give me more resources. Give me a bigger stadium. He coached for Bob. I mean, he played for Bobby Bowden. Like, I can think of so many ties to make it great, but the people at Florida State just have to have the cojones to pull the trigger if and when that time comes.
Derek, are you listening to the podcast? Booger, one of your boys is talking to you right now. All right. And I will add one other thing. You bring up a great point. When you go to the higher level programs, especially a Power Five, you can't promote yourself. You're promoting the school. The uniqueness of Deion Sanders at Florida State is when Deion promotes himself, he's promoting Florida State, because every time I see Deion, there's a generation that says that's Florida State. That's because Deion had a phenomenal NFL career. But I also identify Deion as Florida State.
Correct.
Right? Yes. So each and every time, it's not going to work in another school. It will work specifically at Florida State whenever he's talking about primetime and neon. Right. So we'll see what happens. And obviously they're preaching patience here with Mike Norvell. But you can't lose the way they did the Jacksonville State. Again, there is no excuses, because I think all the positive stuff that was deposited in the bank is completely gone now.
Yeah,
and agreed. It comes bottom line to wins from here on out, and seeing this team go and feel good after games. That okay, we're building towards something. Boog, all right, good stuff, man. We will see you on ABC. You've had an interesting, obviously, your first weekend in the NFL with Boomer on primetime on Sundays, and then Monday Night Football. Your travels, Vegas looked fantastic. I love the stadium. And you caught a phenomenal game. So appreciate you. And we'll talk to you on Saturday.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate it.
Enjoy the lilac. Good stuff there from Booger McFarland. And love talking to him on Wednesdays. He will be with us every single Wednesday. Want to remind you, too, with our format every Thursday, Joey Galloway joins me. And we will make our picks and, of course, break down four or five, six games that really stand out. I also want to get his thoughts on what's going on at Ohio State right now. Plenty of storylines in the SEC this weekend when we talk about Bama and Florida and what Auburn's doing and the QB change at A&M. So Chris Lowe will join us. Love having our reporters on from .com where they can empty the notebook and set the table for the weekend ahead. Big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, of course, on the other side every single Wednesday as well as Thursday. That is the podcast for this Wednesday, September 15th. We will see you tomorrow.